Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 566. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about Roman ruins and sand dunes, veiled women, French colonial architecture, and the Casbah, as we go to Algeria. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. This part of the show may sound a little different today because I'm recording it from a hotel room in Whitehorse, Yukon, at the tail end of a press trip. But we'll talk about that more later on some other show. But first, let's talk about Algeria.
I'd like to welcome to the show Rick Gazarian from GlobalGaz.com and the Counting Countries podcast, who's come today to talk to us about Algeria. Rick, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it. Excited to be on today.
And we'll see how this goes, since we've already had to start this twice, because I started introducing you as talking about another country that starts with A, because it's so hard to believe you went to Algeria, I guess. So why did you go to Algeria?
Well, a couple of reasons. First reason, I am trying to go to every country in the world.
Hence the podcast name.
Exactly. Hence my podcast, Counting Countries. So the UN states there's 193 countries. I'm at 110 right now. So I was in Europe for a bit, and I decided to pick off some countries in Africa, and I saw there was a nice direct flight from Barcelona to Algiers. And I've also read a fair amount about Algeria, and I knew it was a pretty interesting place to visit.
Okay, excellent. And you were in Algeria just recently?
I was there in April.
Why should someone follow in your footsteps and head to Algeria?
I really do think this is quite a travel gem to go visit. It's definitely off the beaten path, so you're not going to be running into a lot of tourists. So it's definitely an unspoiled country. There's no one hawking postcards or really even trying to scam you. Two, there is some very interesting Roman ruins up in the north. Three, you have the influence of the former French colonialism. And also three, some amazing things to see in the south, including the Sahara Desert and one of the unique places I've ever been in my life, a place called Gardea, which is an oasis town in the Sahara.
Excellent. And we laid out an itinerary there. Let's do that in order then. You landed in...
Yeah, I flew from Barcelona, quick flight to Algiers, and I spent 3 nights in the capital. There's around 3 million people there. It's spread across the Mediterranean. It's actually a really good-looking city. Took a shared taxi going east to a small town called El Uma, because I wanted to visit a Roman ruin there.
Well, let's do this one a little slowly, because you already gave us a sort of broader overview. So in Algiers first, what should people see in Algiers?
Yeah, in Algiers, there is no must-see monument or incredible thing that's going to blow you away. But one of the things that I think is on top of everybody's list to visit is the historical section or neighborhood of Algiers called the Casbah.
Sure.
This is a very dense area with very windy footpaths. An old neighborhood going back centuries and centuries, and is also very well known for having a lot of freedom fighters, Algerian freedom fighters, who were fighting against the French during the colonial days.
Okay. Not so much anymore.
Not so much anymore, thankfully. Well, to take a step back, there's not much information relatively about Algeria when it comes to Lonely Planet or really that many websites. One thing I did note on a couple of points, it said do not independently visit the Kasbah region. The couple of places I did note, it says make sure you bring a guide or have a guide accompany you to this region. I did follow that advice. It seemed pretty safe. I didn't have any issues. I think I could have done it independently.
Okay.
But nonetheless, should be a place that you go to visit.
So you had a guide. Where did you find a guide?
That's not an easy thing either. Through a number of Google searches, I ended up on a fellow country counter who had just been in Algeria the month before me, and he had found a guide. So I was really just riding his coattails. So Omar from Fancy Yellow Travels was my guide for the day.
Okay.
And I actually went back a second time. In that time, I actually just went with my taxi driver who I had went to visit somewhere else and sort of befriended.
Okay. So you rented a taxi basically for an afternoon or something rather than just a single ride at some point.
Yeah. So there's a Roman ruin called Tipazia, which is on the outskirts, an hour ride outside of Algiers. So I did hire a taxi driver to take me out there for the morning. And I decided to keep him for sort of a second overview tour of Algiers in the afternoon when they got back.
Well, and that may surprise some people. I'm sure people who are Roman history buffs are not surprised by finding Roman ruins in Algeria and Tunis and places like that in northern Africa. But it may come as a surprise to some that the Mediterranean used to be, as they said, a Roman lake with the Roman Empire all the way around it. In fact, later on, this was part of the Visigoth kingdom, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, a lot of history here that predates the French, for instance.
So, I mean, the Romans were definitely there, I think, started coming in the first century AD, and they had a number of Roman towns and fortifications around the coast of the Mediterranean. I was lucky enough to visit three of them during my visit to Algeria, which were, you know, on the coastline or close to the coastline. One of them was Tipazia, as I mentioned. I was actually really disappointed with that one. You really needed some excellent imagination to appreciate it. Just mostly some boulders left over on the ground. And this one was overrun with tourists, but of the domestic sort. So ton of Algerian people visiting it, picnicking, hanging out, and even doing some selfies.
But not as much to actually see.
Yeah, I don't know why it is.
Well, from Roman point of view, that is.
Correct. So, yeah, I don't know why it's considered such a great site to visit. So,
okay.
In some ways, I would have actually have skipped it if I knew how little there was to see there.
Well, and you started talking about the Kasbah, and I'm not sure we quite finished that. When Omar was taking you around the Kasbah, what kind of things were you seeing? I mean, you're going through a souk, or you're walking through the neighborhood, or you're sitting at a tea shop?
Yeah, it's a combination of a souk and neighborhood. Again, I would say it's more atmospheric than anything else. So you're walking around in these really tight alleyways, getting to see kind of the unique architecture there of how the Kasbah was built. You're going into some markets and watching them sell the typical produce and whatnot. I visited a couple of craftsmen who'd been there. I think I spoke to one gentleman. He was crafting silver, and he'd been there 50 years. Actually, one of the most interesting things that happened, and it wasn't with Omar, it was when I went back with my taxi driver the following day. And the primary language is not English there.
Right.
But the second language there is French. I don't speak French either, but between my 40 words from high school French and Google Translate, I was able to talk to my taxi driver, and we were going down one of the alleyways, and he darted into an apartment building. I really had no idea what he's doing, but I could trust this guy. I'd spent the whole morning with him. Within a couple of minutes, we were in his friend's apartment. And this was a elderly gentleman with an ascot in a unique apartment. And from what I could gather, he was a famous boxer from maybe 50 years ago. So there was all these newspaper cuttings on his wall. Huh. And the three of us were all posing for photos with our fists up. So that's one of those things you never could have anticipated or read about in the guidebook. But I ended up, I think, in some retired celebrity's apartment while darting around the Casbah.
Well, if you read about it in some guides, that would have been the sentence that started with, whatever you do, don't.
I did make it out safely, and I have his address, so I am supposed to send some photos to him. So I still have that to do I need to do.
Excellent. Okay, anything else we want to talk about in the capital before we move on? You mentioned the one Roman ruin.
Yep, so in the capital itself, there's a couple of other things, and excuse my French. Rue de Douche-Murad, which I would call the equivalent of Chicago's Michigan Avenue or Shanghai's Nanjing Road. It's their big main thoroughfare,
okay.
Tons of shops, tons of cafes. On the plus side, as you might imagine, there's no McDonald's, there's no Starbucks. This is a pretty untouched place. So I walked down there a couple of times. I had my dinner there. I stopped at a French pastry shop to have a piece of cake and some coffee. So that's definitely a fun thing to do.
Any favorite cafes or restaurants in the main drag?
I didn't grab a name, so okay. There's plenty to choose from. The weather when I went in April was really nice, so definitely great to sit outside. Also near that road is the Grand Post, which is a early 20th century post office. It's currently closed, but beautiful design in a beautiful Moorish facade. So mm-hmm. You're definitely going to walk by that. And Algiers is nestled between the coast and rolling hills. And on top of one of the high points, one of the hills, is probably the largest monument called the Monument to Martyrs. So this is for all the people who fought the French during the colonial days. So this is a giant structure on one of the hills.
Okay. Anything else in Algiers before we head inland?
On one of the other hills is a beautiful 19th century church, the Notre Dame of Africa. So that's also worth a visit. And again, not really on the guidebooks. When I looked down from this church, again, I'm on a hill, I noted a fairly large cemetery hundreds of feet down. So after visiting that church, Omar and myself popped our head into the cemetery, which obviously can really be kind of a great historical landmark or way to look back in history. Mm-hmm. And here in the cemetery, they had French soldiers who had fought during World War I. They had Jewish people who had also fought in the war. There were also a lot of French civilians who used to live in Algiers who were also buried here. So kind of an interesting and also pretty well-maintained and beautiful place to visit.
Where to next?
You have a couple of different options, but I did a shared taxi. So you basically go to this depot. There's tons of taxis. You tell them where you're going, and they wait for enough people to fill up the car, and you guys all share the taxi to the same destination.
Yep.
So I jumped in one of these shared taxis, which is only several dollars for about 4 hours. And this took me to a town, very small town called El Uma.
In terms of the shared taxi, usually there's a specific place you go to where the shared taxis collect people. Where is that in Algiers?
You got me, Chris. I don't remember the name of the depot. I just spoke to my hotel.
Okay. Talk to your hotel. That sounds good.
Showed up in El Uma a couple of hours later, very small town. From that depot, I very graciously got a free taxi ride from the depot in El Uma to my hotel, which was only a kilometer away, but he refused to take any money. You know, some of the listeners might know that Arab hospitality is a real thing, and Arabs in this region can be very gracious and warm and helpful. checked into my hotel there, spoke to the reception. 30 minutes later, I got another taxi driver to drive me to a nearby Roman ruin about 45 minutes away. This Roman ruin is called, and again, probably pronouncing it incorrectly, Jemala. This one was beautiful. So over a pretty expansive area, rolling hills, greenery, pretty well preserved, or parts of it very well preserved, like a couple of impressive arches and a temple and a amphitheater. Mm-hmm. The other major bonus, there were a couple of locals visiting there, but I only saw one other Western tourist who left shortly after I arrived there. So for all intents and purposes, I shared this entire vast area with only a couple of other people. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was only two rooms. There was also, though, a very, I would call, impressive museum at this Jemala Roman ruin, was some fantastically beautiful mosaics that they had preserved. I was really blown away by them.
Yeah, that's certainly something you tend to see. I've seen that in so many different places where the Roman ruins, where they take some of the mosaics from, usually from the floor. Is that what it was here?
I don't know. I learned later when I went to the Bardo Museum in Tunis, I think, and I might be confusing this, Byzantine mosaics are on the floor and Roman mosaics come from the wall, but I might have that reversed.
I would have said that that would be reversed typically.
Okay, I'll go with you.
Except Byzantines considered themselves Romans, so you can definitely see the connection between the two in terms of mosaic artwork.
Definitely.
Excellent. And then where did you go next?
Yep, so the next morning, again, I went to the taxi depot for the collective in El Uma, and then I went to Constantine, which is further east along the coast of Algeria. Mm-hmm. That one was a quick ride, maybe 60, 90 minutes. I showed up there. Once you get to the depot, then you obviously have to get another taxi to bring you to the last kilometer, so to speak. There was an Ibis hotel, and I checked in there. I came to Constantine because, again, there's another Roman ruin that's relatively close. Mm-hmm. I spent the afternoon walking around in Constantine. No must-see here. I guess maybe one of the more interesting or beautiful things I saw. There's like Victory Arch set up on a high point in Constantine up on a hill. Uh-huh. And really a fantastic, beautiful view from this point. I came up there for the sunset. And Constantine also has some really beautiful bridges. Mm-hmm. So up from this high point and looking down over the city and looking at this bridge and being there for sunset was a pretty cool thing. The name of the bridge again, and I'll be, you know, butchering this, is Pont Sidi Mesid. The Monument Omar is the arch that you want to be at to watch the sunset and overlook this pretty nice bridge.
Okay.
The next day, I took a flight to Gardea. Gardea is going south into the Sahara Desert. And I would really categorize this off the beaten path. Gardea is an oasis in the middle of the Sahara, settled, I think, hundreds of years ago or around 1,000 years ago. And five villages were built and set on five different hills. Okay. Now there's been some urban sprawl over the years, so they look a bit connected, or some of them do. And each one of these villages is a walled-off village, and each one has a high point with a minaret and a mosque serving as the call to prayer. And in the old days, it also served as the watchtower. In short, I was doing this trip independently. Gardea, I don't think you can get away with doing this independently. You need to have a guide with a car because things are spread out. There's no traditional tourist hotel to stay at in town, so to speak, where you can just walk around. So I stayed at a guest house, which was really quite isolated. I was really by myself, and it's not easy to get a taxi. It would have been hour walk to one of these five villages. So I ended up having a guide for my entire time who picked me up in the morning and dropped me off in the evening. So he was my constant companion over my three nights during my stay there.
If I may ask, how much is that going to cost someone in a place like Algeria?
Extremely affordable. I want to say, and I'm going to forget the numbers exactly, my guest house was around, I think, $25 a night.
Okay.
And that included both breakfast and dinner. And it was built in a traditional manner, so it was quite a beautiful place. And I was actually the only guest at the guest house my entire time. My guide was with me again from basically 9 in the morning till probably 9 at night for 3 days. And he was about $30 a day.
Wow.
So okay. Extremely economical for a three-night visit.
Okay.
This area is a really conservative area. And some of course, they want tourism. But in the other light, they're not ready for tourism. Uh-huh. So for instance, every time you walk into one of these walled cities, you're not allowed independent travel. So not only did I have my guide, but you were met by one of the local guides of these five villages. And they had a bunch of rules, like you're not allowed to be there after sunset. Huh. You're not allowed to smoke cigarettes. And the most truly frustrating rule for me, my big hobby or passion is photography. You're not allowed to take any pictures of any people.
Hmm.
So even if you're in a larger market area and there's someone 50 feet away, technically, you're not allowed to snap that photo.
Hmm. Interesting.
Interesting and really frustrating because for me, one of the things that was most fascinating was the dress of the woman in Gardea. So I think we've all seen the burqa and the headscarf.
Sure.
They really took it to a different level in Gardea. And it's called a haik. So most women were dressed in a haik, which was a burqa-like clothing item that was draped over their body, except it was all white. Hmm. And the other thing that really grabbed my attention, I was really fascinated, is the only thing you could see from these women was a single eye. So that was the only visible portion of their body, was a single eye that was showing. So they were always silently gliding by you, sort of like a ghost, and you would just see this one eye peering out of their headscarf. So really different and quite interesting. So we spent 3 days visiting the five different villages, learning about life there, everything from their irrigation systems to fig industry. Every night ended up at one of my guide's friend's house where we sat outside and sip tea. So that was kind of a cool way to end the evening. And I'm not sure who all the guys were, but before I knew it, we'd be sitting outside on the ground drinking very sweet tea with a ton of mint. And there'd be 10 locals, and I would hang out with this group for a couple of hours underneath the moon outside and then end up at my guest house for the next day.
You described this experience sitting here with the locals. It also reminded me, I forgot to ask you when you were talking about riding in the collective taxi. You kind of just glance over that, but for some people, that's going to be a different experience because you're riding with locals who you may or may not be able to communicate with in a very articulate fashion. What kind of interactions did you have as you're in local taxis riding around the country?
I wish I had a good story with the collective taxis. Both times I took one, it was a very silent group.
Really?
So the first one was a minivan where they squeezed in 8 people. It was actually, I was in the bottom back left, and it was really actually kind of claustrophobic, and I had to tilt my head the entire time because the roof was so low. But that was really just 3 hours of silence. You know, it wasn't just me. No one was talking. And then the next one from El Uma was actually a similar situation, just a bunch of strangers sitting in the car together. I think I was listening to a podcast, maybe even yours, as I cruised across northern Algeria.
Well, you certainly get full credit if you're listening to Amateur Traveler while you're doing it, at least.
Definitely. I'm an avid listener. But again, when I was in Algiers, I met Hasmik just driving from Algiers Center to my hotel. There were a couple guys in the back because, again, this was a shared taxi.
Right.
These guys were excited to see me. We had a nice conversation for 10 minutes. In that time period, I befriended the taxi driver enough where he took me to the Roman ruin the next day. So that was more of a engaging and positive experience.
Well, it's definitely one of those places that can be, it doesn't always, obviously, from your experience, have to be someplace where you'll connect with people, but it certainly can be. I remember a collective taxi ride in Oaxaca, Mexico, and at some point the driver is pulling out his guitar because we established that he was a guitar player who drove a taxi and things like that. So it's definitely something that if you have any language skills at all or even some good charades, you know, try and see. Yep, and some days people just don't want to talk. They'd rather sit and listen to the Amateur Traveler podcast, but it's definitely a place to try, I think.
Definitely break out your French when you're there and be making some new friends.
So the 40 words of French you speak, I assume, is where is Anne? She is at the library. And
yeah, I think my favorite phrase is je veux aller, and, you know, add in wherever I'm trying to go.
Yeah, sure. I'm going to.
Exactly. Or I hope that's what I was saying. Yeah. I did use Google Translate quite a bit. And then, I mean, of course, every now and then you would find someone who knew a couple words of English, but definitely realize you can't get by 100% on English, or you need to feel comfortable enough to feel uncomfortable by not speaking either of the languages there.
Right. Now, that was the last of the destinations you went to. Am I keeping track correct?
There was actually one more. So I got dropped off at the bus station by my guide, and I took a long distance bus around 8-9 hours to, I would almost call it like an outpost in the Sahara. So this place was called Timimon, and I got dropped off at the bus station there after about an 8-hour ride, made it to my hotel, checked in there. And this is, both places. The weather up north was really beautiful, kind of like nice fall weather in Boston or Chicago. The weather in April in Gardea and Timimon was somewhat punishing, hot, humid, and dusty and sandy. So you look at your weather app on iPhone, it doesn't say sunny, it doesn't say cloudy, it says dusty. And the whole app is bathed in an orange color. So get ready to try and take a lot of showers, bring some extra t-shirts that you need to make frequent changes of your clothing. Timimon was equally as hot. I remember I got to the hotel, no one spoke English. I tried ordering dinner at the hotel. It literally took, I waited 2 hours to get a bowl of lentil soup and some bread. That was pretty frustrating. Part of the tourist tradition in Timimon is riding around in a four-wheel vehicle in the Sahara. It's called the Sebka Circuit. Okay. So you can arrange this through the hotel. I had my own car and driver, and that was like $50 for the day.
Okay.
So I had a gentleman pick me up in the morning, and which was nice, I wasn't alone. We actually convoyed with two other groups of French people. So the three cars made their way out into the Sahara Desert for the next 8-9 hours and visiting some abandoned villages, some Berber forts, and just taking in the beauty of the desert. Later in the afternoon, we went to an area with larger sand dunes. I don't know if you've done Wadi bashing in Dubai.
No, I haven't been to Dubai. I've done large sand dunes in Morocco in the Sahara. But I mean, the funny thing is you say went to an area with large sand dunes. So it sounds like you're in an area that's similar to the desert I went to, which is desert doesn't mean sand dunes necessarily.
Yeah. I would say the day was split in half. And the first day it was more just flat open desert with some hills there or mountains in the background. Later we went to, I think maybe what the stereotype is.
Yep.
The stereotype of sand dunes. a real popular thing to do in Dubai is you sign up for Wadi bashing, which is you get typically, for some reason, always in a white Toyota 4x4, and they let the air out of the tires and they go speeding along the tops of sand dunes. And every couple of minutes, you feel like your car is going to topple down the hill. And some people get car sick. It's sort of like a roller coaster running on tops of the dunes. So we also did that when we were in Timimon in the Sahara. And again, the really nice thing was the couple of times I've done it in Dubai, there might be 50 or 100 or 150 cars that you see in the horizon. And when we went, I was one of three cars out there. So pretty cool experience being able to do that.
Excellent.
Befriended a Algerian French family who sort of adopted me. So I got to hang out with them during the day. And I met them at the one nice or beautiful hotel that evening, which had an amazing sunset view over their infinity pool over the desert, and then had a nice dinner. And that ended up my Timimon area of the trip.
Excellent. When you decided you were going to Algeria, how did you decide which places you were going to go to?
I bought the Lonely Planet Africa guidebook as a start. So it has, you know, every country in there. And one of the challenges is South Africa might have a lot of information. Algeria really, for, you know, things to see, things to do, I think might be like 8 pages. But I read that. I go to Wikipedia. I go to Wiki Travel. I reach out to some of my travel peers. I read whatever blogs I could find, which were not that many. Another big resource for me when I'm going to kind of a non-popular place is the forum on TripAdvisor and the forum on Lonely Planet.
Thorntree. The Thorntree, yeah.
And I just go back and I read 6 or 12 months of messages within these boards. And one other thing I did, I was originally going to book my tour with a tour provider and have them do everything.
Sure.
The costs were so crazy. For a 10-day trip, they wanted to charge me like $4,000.
Oh my, wow.
And it didn't make sense because...
Because you're talking about hotels that are $25 a night, yeah.
Exactly. I could take a domestic flight for $45.
Right.
And I could stay at the Ibis, you know, not the best brand.
Sure.
But that was $50. So I'm like, where's the other $300 a day go? So then I just started doubling up my research to figure out how to do it independently on my own.
Okay. And were there places that for time you had to cut off your itinerary, but you'd love to get back to when you're there again?
There's a city on the west called Oran, which is sort of their cultural university music town, which sounded interesting. But again, I had to make choices. In the southeast, and I'm probably pronouncing this wrong again, is an area called like Higer Mountains, which is supposed to be another tremendously beautiful nature area. I was originally planning on going there, but there's another issue we haven't touched on, and that's security.
That was actually where we're going next. Yeah.
Okay. I like that segue then. So this area, from my understanding, and actually from talking to one of the original tour providers, this area is off limits to tourists at this time.
And this is near the Moroccan border?
No, no, it's on the other side. So more southeast. Sure.
Okay, got it.
So the situation in Algeria is they went through a vicious civil war in the 90s where tens of thousands of people were killed. For all intents and purposes, I mean, it's some sort of dictatorship right now with a heavy police and military presence throughout the country. I mean, Gardea, the first place I went in the Sahara, I was stunned at the amount of gendarme, police, and military. Literally, I would see 4 policemen in riot gear every second block.
Huh.
But I felt completely safe, and I was never hassled by police or military during my whole 12 days within the country.
Okay.
But in areas closer to the border, so closer to Mali, closer to Niger, some of these areas, I guess, are more of a security issue, and are some of these areas you're not allowed as a tourist to visit.
Okay. Well, and actually closer to the Moroccan border, I know that there's been a story that some Syrian refugees have been kind of trapped in, because it's not a stable place. You're not really allowed to approach the border from either side, either the Morocco or the Algeria side. Yeah, well, one of the reasons I wondered that too is one of the places that I would like to get to is the ruins of Hippo Regius, where St. Augustine was from, who was a Berber. So that was in Algeria, but it's way up there near the border with Tunisia in Annaba. I don't know how safe that region is right now or how stable that region is right now. How did you decide which regions not to go to? Was that the same set of resources you were talking about previously?
Well, I think I narrowed it down to places I wanted to visit first.
Yeah.
And then after the fact, you know, one of them being the Hagar Mountains, I found out that was one of the places that I could not visit.
Okay. Got it.
So up north, I would say, is more stable and safer.
Sure.
And probably the further south you go, it's a little more potentially sketchy. And again, I want to state I felt completely safe and fine traveling independently and by myself and even walking around at night. The one thing I'll just throw in there as a curiosity, the last place, Timimon, I found a taxi driver to take me from the hotel to the airport so I could fly back to Algiers. Again, no one's speaking English. So the guy picks me up. And before, I kind of noticed we're not going direct to the airport, and he stops in front of the police station. And I'm like, you know, what's going on here? And after a couple minutes, I find myself in the police station. I'm giving a policeman my passport, who's jotting down all my information. And then I find out I'm getting a security convoy. I mean, it's just one police car with two policemen. But my taxi was escorted to the airport by a police car. And I guess there is some security issue down there that I wasn't aware of or didn't notice.
Uh-huh.
And one other thing, which was also when I flew from Constantine to Gardea, which was the first place I visited in the Sahara, you were met with by policemen at the airport. And when I got off the plane, and there was definitely a bunch of foreigners on that plane, he looks at me and he's like, you the American? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, okay, we need all of your information. Who's your guide? What hotel you're staying at? I didn't have any of that information. Eventually, my guide showed up. When my guide showed up, he had to produce all of his identification in addition to my identification and provide them with the name of my hotel, etc. So the police or the gendarmes or the military at some level seems to be tracking your whereabouts in the country. And I would say from my experience, you should kind of feel comfortable and good about this, that the government's keeping an eye on you.
Okay. Well, it's certainly in their best interest to see that tourists get home safe and have nice things to say about the country. So, excellent.
That's their motivation. They obviously don't want any international issues of someone going missing.
Right. What surprised you about Algeria? Did it meet your expectation?
Yeah. I did have pretty high expectations for the country because the more and more I was reading, the more excited I was getting. The Roman ruin of Jamala was pretty spectacular. Algiers, I just thought, again, there was no must-see there, but atmospherically, it was a great place. Cruising around in the desert in Timimon was pretty special. My favorite for uniqueness is back to Gardea, those five towns or villages on those five hills.
Uh-huh.
Thinking back, I really haven't seen or witnessed anything similar to that. And I really enjoyed my trip there to that place.
Excellent. Before we go to wrap this up and get to some of our wrap-up questions, anything else that people should know before they go to Algeria?
One good tip, I think, is currency.
Okay.
There is a black market within Algeria, and this makes a giant difference to the affordability of your trip. So give or take, the stated rate is one U.S. dollar to 100 dinar. That's what you'll get from the credit card. That's what you'll get from the ATM. That's what you'll get from the legitimate exchange places. But if you go to the black market, you can get 175 dinar for $1. So you are really making things a lot more affordable by utilizing the black market.
Okay. Good to know. Prettiest spot you saw. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
I'm going to go with Jamala, which was the Roman ruin next to El Uma. You know, it's spring, there's flowers, it's green, there's rolling hills. And again, mostly I had the whole place to myself.
Excellent. One thing that made you laugh and say only in Algeria.
I did have an adventure in Timimon, the Sahara town I last visited. Uh-huh. My iPhone broke. And when in Timimon, I commandeered the one person working at reception. His name was also Omar. And he called his friend who had a car. And the three of us went on an adventure one evening in a very dusty, sandy Timimon to go repair my iPhone.
That is not the normal way that things happen in the Western nations. They just point you to the iPhone repair shop instead of the brother of the cousin of Omar, the guy who works at reception or something.
He literally left the reception desk, called up his buddy, who was also driving around with his 8-year-old daughter. So it was actually the guy with the car, his 8-year-old daughter, me and Omar in the back as we went into the city. Well, I don't want to call it city center, town center, to find someone who would attempt to fix the iPhone.
Excellent. If you had to summarize Algeria in just three words, what three words would you use?
I'll do one word with hyphens: off the beaten path.
Off the beaten path. Okay. I think you owe me a word. Next time you only get two.
Okay. Deal.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Rick Gazarian. Rick, where can people read more about your travels?
Yep. You can go check me at globalgaz.com. That's my blog. As you mentioned, I have a podcast called Counting Countries, which you can see on iTunes and Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Global Gaz.
And what is your current count?
I am at 110 right now, which sounds maybe impressive, but then you say I have 83 left, which sounds pretty daunting.
Right. Well, I find the first 50 are the easiest.
Yep. The next 83, there's definitely going to be some significant challenges as I work my way down that list.
Yep. Excellent. Well, Rick, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing with us your newfound love for Algeria.
Chris, thanks a lot for your time. Thanks for having me.
I would normally do news of the community here, but I don't like the way this microphone sounds. I'm actually just using some earbud microphones. My Plan B microphone didn't work, so I'm on Plan C. But we'll have time for that on later shows. We're going to end this show here. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. Don't forget about the trip to India, amateurtraveler.com/India2017 for more details. And thanks so much for listening.